American woman. It's the Kim Munson Show. Analyzing the most important story.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force?
Hey, welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and happy Monday, happy President's Day. Many of you I know have the day off and just enjoy the day. Got an important show planned for you today as well. We will be talking with Pam Long in this first segment regarding this vaccination legislation that's been introduced down at the State House. In the second segment, Sue Moore will be calling in with the Republican Liberty Caucus of Colorado to give us an update on the legislation from last week. And then in the third and fourth segment, we will be talking with Josh Philip with the Epoch Times regarding why we should really care about this hack of Equifax by the Chinese. It was actually by Chinese officials. And then also talk a little bit about the coronavirus. And so stay tuned. We've got a lot planned for you today. As we look at each of these issues, we look at them as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And there's code words for force. It could be coercion, mandate, regulation. And that's important as you are looking at each of these issues. If you hear those code words, just beware, because there's force that's written all over that. If something is a good idea, you should not have to force somebody. You should be able to persuade them in the battle of ideas. And as we jump in here today, thank you to the team, to producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie for all of your hard work. And thank you to each of you listeners out there. You're each treasured. You're valued. Today, strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. If you want to reach out to me, you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. And be sure and sign up for our email list. We had a little trouble yesterday. We were trying to get Cody Hubley as our writer for this week, and did an excellent piece regarding student loans, and we're having trouble with the link. So to those of you that are on the list, we apologize that it took us three times to get it right. But, you know, Mama said there'd be days like that, Steve.
Yeah. It's a Monday. two things.
Yeah.
Why don't we have today off? Why are we here?
Because there's so much to talk about.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So
the second thing is I'm kind of grousing the fact that I've been victimized once again by fake news.
How's that?
Well, this Bloomberg Clinton thing, I took the bait and I ran with it. And now I'm saying, why did you do that? I think it's because I think I fear Hillary so much. The fact that she continues to go on and on and on. She's never been pulled down for any of her wrongdoing in the last 10 years. And it just drives me crazy. So, yeah, I went with it, but it's been discussed earlier this morning in the previous hour, and I think, Bloomberg doesn't even have the nomination yet. Why would he even, make any type of references to that very minor issue at this time? So I was like, oh yeah, that's true. Why do I absorb this stuff like a sponge?
Well, it's out there, but. You know, I think that actually you mentioned that people have not been brought to justice, and that that will take us very quickly over to one of the national articles that Patty had pulled for us on Patty's Picks here. Is you probably saw, Steve, that there's 1,100 former Justice Department employees. They signed a public letter Sunday urging Attorney General William Barr to resign over his handling of the case of President Trump's longtime friend Roger Stone. And they exhorted the current department employees to report any unethical conduct. The letter is the latest sign of a crisis of confidence inside the department, they say. Four prosecutors quit the Stone case last week after Barr and other Justice Department leaders pushed for a softer prison recommendation for Stone, who is due to be sentenced this week. You do remember that they went in and arrested Roger Stone like a whole SWAT team that came in the wee hours of the dawn and arrested him. And by the end of the day, he was actually out on bail. So the treatment of him and the crime that he did, they don't really match up. I think that what they realize is that William Barr is getting very close to getting to the truth. And that is why these 1,100 Justice Department employees, I believe, signed this letter.
All right. There's fake news and then there's tainted news.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been looking at this one all weekend, and I think this one's tainted.
Mm-hmm.
Because what does it use the word former?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Why are they former? Are they from the Obama era?
Exactly.
Era.
So it's I think it's very political on what that is.
So I don't give this one a whole lot of credence.
Nope. Quickly, let's run through here. Our inspiration for today is from President Harry S. Truman. He was the 33rd president of the United States from 1945 to 1953. He succeeded into the presidency upon the death of FDR after serving as vice president. Truman made the decision to drop the first two atomic bombs on Hiroshima, August 6, 1945, and Nagasaki on August 9th. He also approved the targets, both of which were recommended by a presidential committee called the Interim Committee, made up of the presidential cabinet advisors. He implemented the Marshall Plan to rebuild the economy of Western Europe and establish the Truman Doctrine and NATO. He said, America was not built on fear. America was built on courage, on imagination, and an unbeatable determination to do the job at hand. And then a little funnies this morning. It said, you should be ashamed, the father told his son Andy. When Abraham Lincoln was your age, he used to walk 10 miles every day to get to school. Really? Andy responded. Well, when he was your age, he was president.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a great comeback.
Okay, let's jump over here. We have Pam Long on the line with us. Pam, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Kim.
And we are very jammed up this week because there's so many important things going on. So you're going to be calling in every morning during this first segment, for sure, Monday through Wednesday, because the vaccination bill has been introduced down at the legislature. So set this up for us, Pam.
Okay, well, SB 163 is going by the farce of a name, the Modernization of School Immunizations. And what the media has portrayed this bill as just promoting education for people who are ignorant on vaccines. And, you know, in reality, this bill is a self-state registry. It feeds your personal health choices into the Colorado Immunization Information System to track both children and adults using their personally identifying data, your address, your employer, your phone number. If you should exempt from any of the 70 CDC recommended vaccines, the hearings this Wednesday at the Capitol and the Senate, we expect 1,000 people to show up to speak to oppose this bill.
And what we see then in this bill, isn't there like there is the registry that I think that you mentioned? And if someone would decide to exempt, isn't there kind of like a re-education video or something that they have to go and watch as well?
Yes, this education module is already available on the CDPHE, the health department website. This module will tell you that we have a health crisis here in Colorado, and you should get every vaccine on the market, and that there's no risks or contraindications, when in fact, people do exempt for valid reasons. People exempt for medical contraindication. They have autoimmune issues. These are adults and children that exempt. People exempt because there's no risk of the disease. For example, hepatitis B is something to treat people who are drug users and prostitutes. You might exempt from your child from the chickenpox vaccine because they already had chickenpox and they have lifelong immunity. I mean, there's a lot of good reasons that people exempt. And I think what's scarier than this education module, which you could just dismiss as, you know, marketing, is that it expands this database to collect information on all people from all providers. This includes adults. If you go to a local pharmacy and they offer you a flu shot or an HPV vaccine, which has been demonstrated to be highly reactive, you will go into this database as it coded as a vaccine refusal. And someone could call you or show up at your house under this reminder recall home visit program under this registry. to coerce you into taking a vaccine that you have decided for yourself that you do not want as a consumer.
Okay, Pam, so as I've tried to look at this whole vaccine issue, I really think that I've looked, trying to look at it as past, present, and future. And I feel that this whole vaccine conversation is sometimes it's based, we look back and we say, oh my gosh, you know, it was great to do the measles, mumps, rubella, polio, you know, those childhood diseases that, you know, that seemed like a good idea. But then they take that, and I don't think people realize that at this particular point in time, instead of just, I think there was like, 9 or 11 back when I was a kid, mentioned there's 70 that's now recommended by the CDC, and then we'd have no idea what it might be looking into the future. And I think that is what is, I think that these this conversation looks back to just kind of that basic and then doesn't look forward to this fact that we could have all kinds of things that would be mandated and coerced by unelected bureaucrats. And I see real danger in that, Pam Long.
Well, there's absolute danger because we have more information as consumers than ever before. For example, what has happened in the last just 10 years? Merck has, you know, the Vioxx scandal knowingly killed thousands of people with their Vioxx drug and coerced doctors into ignoring that we were killing people by heart attack through that drug. Hey, Merck also makes the MMR vaccine for children. Do we think that Merck has better, you know, ethics when it comes to their vaccine products than it did with Vioxx? No, there are a percentage of parents who are saying until there's real accountability and safety studies over these manufacturers of drugs that also produce the opioid epidemic, then we're going to be a little more cautious with these 70 doses.
Okay, and so what is going to be, we're just about out of time for today, Pam, but what is your call to action? What is it that you need people to do this Wednesday?
We need people prior to Wednesday contacting the Senate Health Committee, 5 people on that committee, and contacting their state senators and saying, I oppose the immunization bill. This is an invasion of privacy. This is discrimination. This is data tracking. This is, and show up to the hearing. You will see an unprecedented amount of people on Wednesday at the Capitol, you know, going up against the Democratic majority saying, this is too far. We make our own health choices, right? Democratic Party, that's the party of choice, right? Why can't we make our decisions on which vaccines we inject into our body?
Well, about the only thing that I see the Democrat Party, which has been taken over by radical activists, is the only thing that they seem to have a choice, want us to have or stand for choice on, and that is the abortion of babies. Otherwise, they seem to want control over everything in our lives. And this registry, and whenever you hear the word registry, you know, certainly you need to be concerned on that. So, Pam Long, keep us informed. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 6:10, and thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go to break. When we come back, Sue Moore with the Republican Liberty Caucus of Colorado is on the line to give us an update on legislation that was proposed last week. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com, and you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And before we get over to Sue Moore, you know, it is the Avs, they're in the hunt. They could have really done things on Saturday night, but they ended up losing. And we've got the NBA All-Star Activities, and March Madness is coming up. The place to watch all these games is Hooters Restaurants. They have plenty of TV, so you won't miss any of the action. Wednesday is Dine and Wing Day, all the wings you can eat for $15.99. They've got these new roasted wings. My favorite's the boneless wings. And if you don't want to cook, drop by Hooters restaurants and pick dinner up to take home. Or you can have Hooters wings delivered right to your front door. For more information, check out my website. That's KimMunson.com. Sue Moore with the Republican Liberty Caucus of Colorado. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kim. I'm happy to be here.
Okay, what do you have for us, Sue? What's going on down at the State House?
Well, there's a lot going on. But before I get going on that, I wanted to give a quick nod to my committee, just so people know, we are the Republican Liberty Caucus. We are a national organization. We do have a charter here in Colorado, which we have several members, quite a few members, actually. But I did want to give a nod to our Liberty Scorecard Committee. I actually have several very, very committed patriots who read these bills every week. And then we also get on conference calls once or twice a week to discuss them. So I've got former Senator Tim Neville, who you talked to a couple weeks ago. Carl Honegger is on my committee. He's also vice chair of the Liberty Caucus. He's a treasury analyst for an oil and gas company. Steve Dorman is a longtime activist in Jefferson County GOP. Susan Kochevar, who I know you know, owns the 88 Drive-In Theater. She's a small business owner, and she also runs the Colorado Republican Business Coalition. Mark Alville is a business owner. He owns an engineering consulting firm. And Paul Cohen is a retired attorney and graduate of the leadership program of the Rockies. So just so you know, it's not just me reading through these bills and evaluating them all by myself. We actually have a lot of people working on this. It takes a lot of people because there are so many bills coming through. So we discuss these bills weekly. We kind of run them through our meat grinder of principles. And then we come up with our ratings of support or oppose. So that's kind of how things happen behind the scenes.
Okay.
There were several bills introduced. I know Pam's already discussed the vaccination one, and we totally agree with her ideas on that. There was one that would replace illegal alien with undocumented immigrant in all state documents, all statutes. And this bill does essentially nothing. It's House Bill 1294, other than, you know, change the terminology. And, you know, keep in mind that it costs about $8,000 just to run a bill every year. So this is money that is we don't think is very well spent. We obviously oppose the bill based on fiscal responsibility and limited government principles. So, that's kind of a dud of a bill in our opinion.
Okay.
There's another one that's kind of related to the vaccination bill, House Bill 1297. It's titled Immunization Status and Child Abuse Neglect. And basically it says that if you refuse to vaccinate your child, that cannot constitute parental neglect or child abuse, which to most of us would seem like common sense. The fact that they have to run a bill like this tells you what the political climate is in Colorado. Mm-hmm. So we support this bill. You know, obviously, if you're not vaccinating your children, you're not neglecting them or abusing them. So we do support this bill based on individual liberty, personal responsibility. Parents should have the right to do this. So that's a juicy one. 1298, it's kind of a wonky bill about income tax credits for economic development. And basically, it's tax policy that would benefit large corporations at the expense of small businesses. So, you know, we disagree. We oppose this bill based on equal protection. It's kind of a choosing winners and losers. It gives, you know, basically tax benefits to certain companies. And we don't like this bill at all. So we oppose that bill. Then it has a sister bill, 1299, that gives enterprise zone tax credits for renewable energy investment. So, you know, it's very similar in intent. It's also more anti-oil and gas kinds of things going on. So it provides favorable tax treatment for investment in renewables. So we oppose that bill. Again, based on equal protection, we don't think the government should be involved in choosing winners and losers, and it opposes free market principles as well. I can keep going. There's one on electronic attendance in school district board meetings, House Bill 1301. And this is interesting. We had to read this one a couple of times. Basically, it allows anyone on a school district board to attend a school board meeting virtually through electronic ways. Well, you know, that sounds like a really good idea. You know, I mean, we're in the 21st century now, and you should be able to do that kind of thing. The problem is that if you want to oppose, if you want to meet with your school board and oppose a policy, you actually have to show up in person to do that. So if you're talking to a bunch of, you know, computers or, you know, listening on a certain speakerphone kind of thing, it just doesn't have the same effect. So we do think that school board members, once elected, do have the obligation to actually show up for board meetings in person. So,
well, and it seems obviously like a school board could have a a policy that if somebody for some reason needed to, you know, call in or something, that they could just on a, you know, very limited basis. But I, you know, I'm like you, I could see big trouble down the road where the citizen has to show up, but the school board member doesn't. There is something that and you kind of have to wonder, because I feel that many times these bills are playing long ball. And so what would the long term, consequence be to this? I think you're right. I think you the citizen could show up and you could be talking to a bunch of computers or something.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it, like I said, on the surface, it sounds like a good idea, and it seems like that's where the future is going. But at the end of the day, it's not fair that they should be able to show up electronically, but you have to be there in person.
I agree.
So, and it even states that it requires the board members attending electronically be included in the number of persons present necessary to convene a meeting in order to convene a quorum. So, you know, ultimately you could have everyone just calling in sick and being on a speakerphone. And, you know, it just doesn't have the same impact, and it just doesn't seem fair. So
okay.
We obviously
okay.
oppose that bill.
Okay.
Pam already talked about the school entry immunization. Yes, we're in agreement over that. Senate Bill 164, treatment of dogs and cats in shelters and rescues. So this bill requires every animal shelter and pet animal rescue to adopt out each dog and cat in its custody. So sounds good. You know, we don't want pets being killed, dogs and cats that are otherwise healthy and adoptable. But you can't mandate that requirement on a pet shelter. You know, at some point they may run out of business. They may run out of resources. So it's, you know, it's a rock and a hard place for these people who are otherwise doing really important and, you know, very, very, you know, very, very good work. So it's a silly bill in our opinion. So we oppose that one.
And just to comment on that, many times people that are, you know, have said, and I love animals, I love dogs, and so understand that. But it seems to me like sometimes the people that care so much about dogs and cats have no problem over here on the abortion side aborting children. I can't quite match that one up, Sue Moore.
I totally agree with you, Kim. We try not to get too much into the abortion issue, just because it's such a lightning rod. But I totally agree with you. There's way too much importance spent on, put on, you know, dogs and cats and pets and much less importance put on actual babies' lives.
Yeah.
So yeah,
okay.
we're in agreement on that.
Okay.
If I still have time, there's yeah. Bill 160. How we doing?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Senate Bill 166, simplifying the requirements for a new birth certificate. This is an interesting one. It says that it aligns the requirements for a minor to obtain a new birth certificate with those of an adult. Okay. But if the sex, and it's talking about sex designation, so if you're a minor, you should be able to change that probably without parental consent, but only with talking to some kind of behavioral professional. And that's very loosely defined. So it doesn't require a minor to undergo any kind of treatment or even talk to anyone in behavioral health care. You just have to get some kind of medical professional to sign off on that. You know, it's a very sticky issue. It's a very personal issue for many people, but we do think that minors ought to be at least a little bit restricted on that, and there ought to be more protections for them and certainly more parental oversight when that's appropriate and when that's, you know, when that's available. So obviously we oppose that bill. Here's one on electric motor vehicle manufacturer and dealer, Senate Bill 167. It says that a motor vehicle, we already have a law that says motor vehicle manufacturers may not own, operate, or control a motor vehicle dealer. This actually exempts motor vehicle manufacturers of electric vehicles. So you can see where this one's going. It's picking winners and losers again. They want to benefit electric vehicles over gas vehicles. So obviously we oppose that based on equal protection.
We probably have one more, Sue.
Okay. Education, accountability, and accreditation systems audit. House Bill 1295. It's a very long bill, and it wants to, obviously they want to hold the education system, the schools, accountable and create a better accreditation system. Our fear with this one is they're going to create a new system that might not create a level playing field for charter schools. So it's they want to kind of rework this entire system. We oppose it. There's no fiscal note on this one yet. We're going to watch it a little bit for a little while. But it seems to be overstepping government and fiscal responsibility. We think it's going to have a rather large fiscal note because they need to actually hire this out, this accreditation and accountability.
Sure.
Anyway, those are the biggies for this week.
Okay.
And we'll keep our eye out for next week.
Okay. Well, sounds great. Sue Moore with Republican Liberty Caucus of Colorado. Thank you so much. And that is, rlcco.org, right?
Right. That's where all these bills are posted. You can see what our thoughts are. So RLCC.org, that stands for Republican Liberty Caucus of Colorado.org.
Okay, great. And one more time, I don't think I got that correct. So what is that website?
RLCCO.org.
Got it. Okay. Sue Moore, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next Monday morning.
All right. Thanks, Kim.
Okay. And before we go to break, Jason McBride is on the line with Presidential Wealth Management. Happy President's Day, Jason.
Yes, you too. Very much so.
That last bill that Sue was talking about, Senate Bill 2167, apparently up until just now, Tesla was able to sell their vehicles directly to the consumer without a dealer. And now what this bill does is this says that on any electric vehicle, that can be sold directly to the consumer without a dealer. And so it certainly is picking winners and losers because it's saying some people have to adhere to a law and some people don't regarding specific products. But then Tesla, you know, their earnings came out a week or so ago, and they had earnings that I think had exceeded expectations. So I was surprised to see that they then did a stock offering, and they raised $2.3 billion. So what's going on with that, Jason McBride?
Well, boy, that stock has been on a crazy tear since the earnings came out. And the earnings were good, but not that huge. But it sounded like when the earnings came out, they also, Kim, said they were going to be delivering more cars than expected. Now, they've said that before, and it hasn't turned out, so it was interesting that so much credence was put into it this time around. But I'll tell you, I think a lot of what happened is something that came out scared the short sellers, because there was a huge short position in Tesla's stock, and these guys have been running to try to cover ever since then, and it's propelled the stock from right, you know, in the $200 range all the way up to almost $900.
Wow.
And that thing went vertical. It hit $968 on February 4th. It's now pulled back a little bit, and I'm not surprised at all that they did a stock offering. If I'm a company and I'm going to offer stock, I want to do when my stock is really, really high.
Mm-hmm. And really, really.
So you give away less shares.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll keep an eye on it. You know, Tesla, I really think it's important to compete in the free market. Tesla gets all kinds of government money in the way of here in Colorado. You could get a income tax credit of a total of $12,500, and I think that's $7,500 on your federal and $5,000 on your state. And those taxes have to be made up by everybody else then. I don't think that it's right that government picks winners and losers on this. So one other thing, Jason, you'd put together, we had talked about it a week or so ago, your early year stock indicator guide. And that is on our website, airpresidential.com. And people can get a copy of that, right?
Yeah, this just talks about five indicators that may or may not give you a clue to what might be in store for the market for the rest of the year. Kim, we talked about them a little bit last time I was in studio, but the guide gives you the tables and more details if you're kind of one of those wonky folks. If not, it's just interesting to kind of read the statistics. So check out the early year indicator guide. On our website, there's also a podcast where John Buckingham and I discuss that in quite a bit of detail too, Kim. So again, the early year indicator guide, absolutely free at AIR, that's A-I-R, presidential.com, or give us a call, 303-694-1600. We're glad to get a copy out to you.
Okay, well, sounds great. And Jason, we will talk to you tomorrow, although today, is your office is closed because of President's Day?
Yeah, and you knew that, but you still made me get up at 5:30 because you're a slave driver.
So today, if you want to get a copy of it, go to airpresidential.com, and then Natalie will be at the switchboard tomorrow at 7:30 at 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. Jason, thank you so much.
Have a great show, Kim.
Thank you. And we're going to go to break. When we come back, we will be talking with Josh Philip. He is with the Epoch Times. And as many of you know, I'd seen this headline about Equifax had been hacked. And turns out it was actually Chinese officials that did that. And so we want to talk with Josh about that. And then if we have time, get his thoughts on the coronavirus as well. So this is Kim Munson. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the show. I am Kim Munson. Check out my website, kimmunson.com. That's spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And I'm very excited to talk with Josh Philip. He is a senior investigative reporter with the Epoch Times. Welcome to the show, Josh.
Hey, real pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Wanted to chat with you about these four Chinese military officers. And they're members of the People's Liberation Army that broke into Atlanta-based Equifax in 2017. And they stole a whole bunch of data on a whole bunch of Americans. So what happened and why is this important, Josh?
Right. So these hackers were with the 54 Research Institute of the People's Liberation Army. And I can explain what that means in a bit. But briefly, they hacked Equifax, which is a credit company. And so this is not a normal, say, theft of intellectual property where they're stealing, let's say, designs for products. They're stealing things for economic gain. They were stealing things like social security numbers, credit card numbers, personal information on people, things that would not be usable unless they wanted to, say, do identity theft. And there's been no sign that they used it that way, which does raise some serious questions on, well, okay, what was that data being used for? And I think there's two cases we can look at, or a few cases we can look at, around that same time that have similar identifiers, which do suggest what they were using it for. The biggest of these being the OPM breach, the Office of Personnel Management breach, where Chinese hackers had also stolen information on, say, U.S. government officials applying for security clearances. In other words, where they sit you down and they put sensors all over you and they ask you really personal questions and you spill your guts to them and they know every dark secret you have. And that information, of course, when it comes to espionage, when it comes to military stuff, can be used to exploit individuals, blackmail individuals, you name it. And so this does suggest that they are collecting large amounts of information on Americans. I think Equifax is 145 or 147 million people, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That they are collecting this data for use in some kind of system of some kind, we can assume, that has a database that has this information and allows them to have identifying information on millions and millions of Americans.
Seems really dangerous to have that information out there, but I can't quite figure out why would they want that, Josh?
Well, so let me. I did an article a few years back that I think could explain that, and I had a source come to me with pretty crazy claims, to be honest. I wasn't sure if I wanted to believe it at first, but he told me that basically China had used a smart city program to build a database on Americans. And at first I had trouble believing that, but then I saw something else, that China had rolled out a very similar program inside the mainland, which is a social credit system.
Mm-hmm.
And basically this system, it has data on every single person in the country. It looks at your purchases, who your friends are, who your connections are, what are their political views, what do they buy online every day, what are their daily habits. You know, what do they say online, all these things. And it assigns every single person a social credit score. And your social credit score is going to determine your freedom or oppression in that society. But, of course, I've been studying Chinese espionage, Chinese military operations since about 2008. And I know that organizations such as one of their main overseas spy branches, the United Front, they regard even second and third generation Chinese as being part of their system, and they keep databases on them. You know, I've reported on this for years. And so it only makes sense that they'd extend a database like that to foreign contacts, one, and then might as well keep expanding it to include all data on foreign individuals. And so I assume that's what this was for.
Okay, you mentioned Smart City, and I have seen information here. In fact, I think that out by DIA, Panasonic is, quote unquote, kind of building a smart city or out there. So, and I kind of saw danger when I heard that term, but this has piqued my interest on this. So is that the same thing, Josh Phillip, as the smart city stuff that's happening here in the United States?
Well, yes and no. Yes, in that it's the infrastructure that would allow for that same type of social monitoring. No, in that we can't say for sure that's what they're doing. At the same time, while in China, they say the social credit system is in fact run by the Communist Party's, you know, system itself. It's run by the government. In the United States, on a corporate level, on the individual technology, you know, company holder level, they do collect data just like that on individuals. It's mm-hmm. just not being used against us as far as we know. But when it does come to smart cities, this, of course, this ties into 5G and some of the big concerns around it, is that the question is who builds it, who controls it. When China, through its One Belt, One Road initiative, is going abroad to other countries and building all this high-tech infrastructure, they are installing these same technologies they use for their own system of, say, high-tech tyranny. For example, in Darwin, Australia, they're already putting in the social credit system, activating parts of it. In parts of Latin America, they're already using the social credit system as a system to monitor and govern their citizens. And China is playing a hand in the exporting those technologies.
I hadn't really thought about the term high-tech tyranny. And you mentioned 5G. I know that people have reached out to me, and they say that they are concerned about 5G. What's your thoughts on that, Josh Phillip?
Right. So 5G is, you know, of course, wireless technology has generations. We had the analog stage, which was 1G. We had 2G, which was like GSM and basic cell services. When it moved to 3G, 4G, that's when we started getting the ability to have, say, more data on our cell phones 4G opened up 2 gigabytes per second, you know, transfer rates. 5G is fifth generation wireless technology. And basically, the technology is already there. The infrastructure is already there. A lot of companies are already offering 5G. The thing is they don't really, they don't really have devices that allow for us to really tap into it yet. And there's a few reasons for that. One being the main draw for 5G is what they call different bands. So they have low band, mid band, and high band frequencies. Technologies so far have only really used low and mid band. 5G technology opens up the ability to use high band, which means more channels for devices, much higher, just in general, the technology itself, much, much higher latency, which means less delay in the transfer of data, and much, much more data. So for an average device, you're talking 20 gigabytes. Per second. The problem we have with this is that in order to open up that high band technology, they need much, much more infrastructure, because the range of that high band frequency technology is very short. And so you would need these companies to pretty much put in all these micro, towers all over the place to essentially do that. And the other concern is, well, why do we need that technology? The real issue is that in terms of consumer technology, streaming videos on your cell phone, playing video games, whatever you want to do, pretty much the current technology allows for that. 5G might open up, ultra-high resolution on your cell phone to stream Netflix, but you already kind of have that anyway. The big thing they want to use it for is things like AI-driven cars that can communicate with each other, robotics, AI systems that work independently, high-definition surveillance cameras, that type of thing. And it does open the door for a lot of technologies people are worried about, one, and also it's dealing with, say, technologies and frequencies that naturally exist in nature, these bands that essentially we just throw our communications onto, that we don't really understand the effects of yet. 5G is also like a permeating technology. There's concerns that it can control, say, electronic systems. And there's also controls, again, over who controls it. China, for example, through its One Belt, One Road initiative, is building it. From what I understand, its systems are not as well made as the U.S. systems and require much, much more infrastructure. And at the same time, China, on programs such as they call it the Assassin's Mace program, they have, in fact, experimented and worked on and have documents on this. How to weaponize the electromagnetic spectrum, which would include technologies like this.
And didn't President Trump kind of trying to roll some of this activity back regarding China? And is it the company, I don't know how to pronounce it.
Huawei.
Yeah. I think he's indicated some concerns. And so isn't he kind of jumping in from a national security standpoint to kind of pull that back a little bit?
Well, the concerns around Huawei go back to the Obama administration, when the U.S. government had sent out this warning about Huawei and ZTE, which are two of the largest Chinese telecom companies. And keep in mind, Huawei is no joke. I mean, they're one of the biggest telecom companies in the world. We don't really have it so much in the U.S. as much, but if you're in most countries, it's not uncommon to see people with Huawei phones. I think they're the first or second biggest cell phone provider. And when it comes to countries, in Latin America, countries in Africa, they run the infrastructure. The problem is yes, they are engaged in all the nefarious things that we know the Chinese military and the Chinese Communist Party are engaged in. They have some very shady connections. And yes, Huawei was just indicted for, I think, close to two dozen crimes, not the least of which being conspiracy to defraud the United States.
Okay, so... And President Trump, what did he do about that then?
Well, Trump's been warning about Huawei for a long time. I think, like I mentioned, the concerns around Huawei go back to the Obama administration. Trump is, I'd say, moved on those concerns, and whether him or his administration, they have indicted Huawei. They're pressing charges against Huawei as a whole company right now.
Okay. Josh Philip, I know when we had booked this that I had not really paid attention and you were planning on one segment, but I'd like to have you for one more segment. Does that work for your schedule?
No, totally.
Okay, great. We're going to go to break. When we come back, I am talking with Josh Philip, and he is a senior investigative reporter with the Epoch Times. So he's an expert on China. And I'd also like to talk with you about the coronavirus. So let's go to break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation with Josh Philip.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email Kim at KimMunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, KimMunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and I am talking with Josh Philip, senior investigative reporter with the Epoch Times, and an expert on China. And Josh, it's great to have you on the show today.
Yeah, again, real pleasure. Thank you.
The coronavirus. People are concerned about it. I have people that have reached out and said that we're not getting the truth from China, that they're, you know, it's odd that the doctor who was the whistleblower on it ended up dying. I mean, what's your thoughts on this whole thing, Josh?
It is very odd. And pretty much all the information that comes out gets proven false not too long after. In fact, on the Chinese internet, it's dark humor. It's a joke. The Chinese Communist Party put out numbers and then changed the numbers again, but they reduced the numbers rather than increase them in terms of the dead. And so people were joking, oh, it's a miracle. The Communist Party, you know, revived 100 people.
Wow.
and the running joke was essentially that most people in China know the government's lying to them. And the government knows that the people know that they're lying to them. And so it's like they're not even trying. It's just they just throw numbers out. And yeah, for the international community, I think people are coming around also that, oh, you know, they're not letting in foreign, you know, they're not letting in medical researchers. They're not letting in foreign aid. They're not letting in people who can go and figure out what's actually happening. They're not providing us with the data to prevent a potential global pandemic, which is the real concern right now. And so, yeah, it is a concerning situation, I'd say.
Well, now, my understanding is that the coronavirus is man-made. Is that correct?
We can't say for sure, but the current evidence coming out in terms of the virus sequence does suggest that a virus like this could not happen naturally in nature. And I can explain kind of the track that this has gone on so far. So the initial narrative is, oh, it came from this seafood market, came from people eating bat soup. Oh, you know, look at this crazy-looking dish they were eating of this horrifying-looking bat in a bowl of soup. You know what I mean? That was mm-hmm. the initial narrative that went around. That narrative is proven false already. Basically, the Chinese Communist Party suppressed news of the virus when it first emerged. There were different doctors in China blowing the whistle saying, hey, there's this weird disease spreading. We don't know where it's coming from. The Chinese Communist Party arrested those doctors in early December. Basically, the first case now is traced back to December 1st, and that case had nothing to do with that market. And then some of the subsequent cases as well that came out, most of them had nothing to do with that market. And so it does bring up the issue of, okay, well, if that narrative that it came from the marketplace in bat soup or whatever is false, then where did it come from? And speculation on this is being labeled conspiracy. It just so happens, though, that just 20 miles up the road from that marketplace, the epicenter of where this virus allegedly did come from, is the P4 research lab, where the Chinese Communist Party has its most advanced virus research center that does, in fact, research coronaviruses, and which had bragged multiple times about, you know, its research in this area, including in 2015 when they had published a paper stating they had successfully altered a bat coronavirus to be human transmittable, one that in terms of its sequence, the sequence of the current virus very much fits the description that they had made.
So the question is, why would they do that?
That is a good question. We can speculate on that. We can't say for sure. There's a video coming out now from 2 years ago about this Chinese general talking about weaponizing viruses. They've talked about this for a long time. Now, as a bit of history, China is a signatory, right? They've signed the Biological Weapons Agreement. They have agreed to not develop biological weapons. But if you read State Department reports, including from last year, they say that, yes, China signed it, but they never showed any signs of getting rid of their biological weapons programs, which we know go back to at least the 1950s. So China, and then also Chinese military doctrine coming out, including in 2005, where they had some pretty serious claims coming from the head of the Chinese military, do talk about this. They were talking basically, I mean, I should be clear about something. When it comes to Chinese generals and Chinese military officers, a lot of U.S.-based defense and analysts don't really know what to make of them because they make such bizarre comments that they're hard to take serious. But we do often see them moving on those comments, which is concerning. And in 2004, 2005, the head of the Chinese military came out and talked about how China needed to expand its borders in order to do that. In order to do that, of course, it might require war, and any war would risk intervention by the United States. And so what's the solution to that? Well, conventionally, we think nuclear weapons, but that's mutually assured destruction. And so he suggested the use of biological weapons, you know, to wipe out the population of the United States through means that could not be easily traceable back to China. And, you know, discussions like this go back to even the Cold War and the Soviet Union, where they were talking about weaponizing cold fronts. Talk is, of course, different than practice. Can we prove for a fact that they did this? Not really. But they did talk. They have talked about it, and they've talked about it frequently. When it comes to the virus itself, we can say one thing for sure, which is the outer part of this virus, in terms of the sequence, the outer shell, it is a 100% match to a bat coronavirus submitted to these databases by the Chinese military in Nanjing province. And we also know that the spikes, these little protruding, you know, spike-looking things on the virus itself, those are almost a 100%, very close match, I should say, to the SARS virus. And so how did a bat virus, you know, submitted to this database by the Nanjing military merge somehow with a SARS virus replica of some sort? I think that is a pretty serious question to ask.
Okay, so this does get us kind of to conspiracy theory, I guess. But the question would be that, well, I guess I look at it and you see just the way China had treated the protesters in Hong Kong. There is not a real value of life, I don't think. And so I'm not sure that they wouldn't mind sacrificing, you know, possibly thousands of their citizens if, in fact, you know, they were going after America. I know that's a little out there, Josh, but that seems like connecting the dots, that might be what's happening.
Well, the Chinese Communist Party under Mao Zedong alone killed somewhere between 50 million and 70 million Chinese people. Under Jiang Zemin, the former head of the Chinese Communist Party, going 2 leaders ago, he launched the persecution of Falun Gong, which was like Chinese yoga, basically. And, you know, that was 70 million to 100 million people. Not all killed, of course, but re-education through labor, torture, some killed. We found, of course, that using them as living sources for organ transplants. You're dealing with a atheist communist regime. And this isn't saying atheist is, you know, always like this. But basically, when you're dealing with a country that says, you know, whatever we do is the standard of morality. There's no power higher than the government. Anything they do is the standard of morality. Anything that, you know, this goes back to 1967 Mao Zedong, the original definition of political correctness. What was it? It was whatever the government does is what's correct. If you follow it, you are politically correct, and if you don't, you are not politically correct. You can be killed for it. The Chinese Communist Party sets the baseline of what morals are. Anything it does is considered moral, and if you support it or don't support it, that's what's considered your choice of right and wrong within that society. And so, yeah, nothing is beyond them.
Wow. And so when Trump has indicated that China is a real threat, and then we have other politicians that say that it's not, as of this morning, I'm like, that China is a real threat, Josh Phillip.
I agree. And it's one of the few issues I think there's a lot of bipartisan support on, too. I know Nancy Pelosi has been pretty good on China as well, including on Chinese human rights going back pretty far, which I've always respected her for. But, yeah, China is a real threat. And, of course, part of my research, again, I've been researching this stuff since, at least 2008, looking into their foreign operations, front operations, you know, spy operations, subversion, unconventional warfare. They talk about war without morals. And the way they look at warfare is, you know, things like culture warfare, drug warfare. How do you poison a country? How do you destroy the moral foundations of a country? How do you destroy the cultural foundations of a country? Adopted into the military code is the three warfares doctrine: psychological warfare, media warfare, and legal warfare. How do you manipulate the interpretations of reality of people? How do you change the way people interpret information? That's what psychological warfare is. How do you control outlets of information? That's what media warfare is. How do you manipulate the standards and laws of different societies? That's what legal warfare is. This is adopted into the military code. They are waging war on us through what they call short of war tactics, or what the U.S. calls short of war. In other words, they understand where the line is, and they will push their operations right to the very edge of that line and never cross it.
Wow.
And so they know how to work us, basically.
Okay. Well, Josh Phillip, we are out of time. Thank you so much. You are with the Epic Times. Would highly recommend that people check that out. Josh Phillip, thank you so much.
Hey, real pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. And Harry Truman said, work hard, do your best, keep your word, never get too big for your britches. Trust in God, have no fear, and never forget a friend. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. Like a new moon rising.